Harry Potter and the Secrets in the Shadows and the Secrets in the Shadows by Mr. 3CP, read by Sam Gabriel. Yeah, I'm gonna record some of this fic in front of two underage kids. I'm not gonna get to any of the parts that are objectionable tonight, but honestly, Hermione blamed herself. After all, wasn't she the smartest witch of their age? The girl who practically dragged Harry and Ron's asses out of the fire 1,000 times over. The girl who had more than likely read every damn book in the Hogwarts library. The girl who had more than likely read every damn book in the Hogwarts library. And yet, in this regard, she had failed. She had failed so wholly, so utterly, that she just couldn't bring herself even to think on it. But no, she had to. Someone had to remember. And if she didn't, she highly doubted anyone else cared to. So as tears slid silently down her cheeks, that was what she did. She remembered. May, 1998. Harry was standing by the shore of the lake again. He seemed to be doing that more and more in the last few days, gazing into the lake's ink-black depths, as though it contained some secret he was desperate to uncover. Hermione was worried about him. She and Ron had noticed. Anyone who looked at him noticed that he didn't look right. The bags under his eyes were far, far too pronounced. His skin was even paler than normal, and his eyes just looked so empty. For weeks she watched, helpless, as her every attempt to reach Harry fell flat. When he wasn't out in public, he was in Grimmauld Place, simply moping, or whatever it was you called what he was doing, while the world spun on without him. Time and again she would visit, with Ron, alone, with Ginny, with Luna, with Neville. Even McGonagall visited more than once. But it was to little avail. Harry was just broken. And for the first time in her life, Hermione could think of no solution. She took off her top. No. In the end, it was Luna who came up with the idea. It shouldn't have surprised Hermione, really. She always liked to contrast herself with the younger girl. She was all logic, while the other girl defied any and all logical convention with a blissful smile on her face. When she floated the idea to the group, Hermione had almost dismissed it out of hand. But the longer she thought on it, the more sense it made. At the very least, it was worth a try, and that was how the core members of the DA found themselves in the drawing room. Harry sat across from them with an apathetic expression. "We think this could really do you some good, Harry." As agreed, Ginny had led the pitch, her hand placed comfortingly on Harry's knee. That at least got a smile, small though it was. It seemed like Ginny was the only one who could still make Harry smile these days. He spoke up, and it might have just been her imagination reaching for straws, but Hermione swore she could hear at least a fragment of hope in his voice. You honestly think it would help? Hermione nodded emphatically with her kindest smile, while Ron squeezed her shoulder, eyes focused on his best friend. What will you do, mate? When you think about it, Britain's always going to hold bad memories, as well as the good ones. I'm not saying you need to go for long, but just seeing the rest of the world, making these new memories, we just think it'd do you a world of good. The rest of the group all voiced their encouragement, and slowly, Harry nodded.
Oh, wait, no, Ron shouldn't sound that old.
We really do, mate. When you think about it, Britain's always going to hold bad memories, as well as the good ones. We aren't saying you need to go for long, but just seeing the rest of the world, making these new memories, we just think it'd do you a world of good. The rest of the group all voiced their encouragement, and slowly, Harry nodded. For the first time in almost a year, since Bill and Fleur's ill-fated wedding, Hermione thought she saw real hope in his eyes. Okay. I'll go for a few months. Clear my head, maybe explore. Any recommendations? Thrilled at the perceived progress, they all leapt in, and for a little while things felt normal. 2 days later, Harry got an international port key to Cyprus via France, his meager possessions in a pack Hermione had taken joy in enchanting for him, promises to see them all in 6 months falling easily from his lips. He was gone 4 years. July. July, 2002. Hermione had been practically vibrating with excitement as she clung to Ron, awaiting the next port key to come through. 4 years of absence, the only contact being letters every month or so. Not that she begrudged Harry his time, of course. On the contrary, she was thrilled. Each letter painted a picture of recovery, as more and more of his wit bled back into the messages, and she could feel her friend returning to her. Given her fixation with his recovery, she could perhaps be forgiven for missing how often the Ministry had stories of murders or dark magic performed in places eerily close to wherever Harry would be sending a letter from. I could do that sentence better. She could perhaps be forgiven for missing how often the Ministry... She could perhaps be forgiven for missing how often the Ministry had stories of murders or dark magic performed in places eerily close to wherever Harry would... In places eerily close to wherever Harry would be sending a letter from. Alas, she never put it together. But then she'd always had a blind spot where Harry was concerned. And there he was. The air whirled, and Harry landed gracefully, straightening with an elegance far removed from the sprawling form of his younger self when interacting with port keys. As one, Ron and Hermione rushed forwards, and the trio was reunited in a tight hug as Harry's warm chuckle sounded around them.
Yeah, I missed you guys too.
Hermione pulled back with a glare that was significantly weakened by the beaming smile she couldn't quite repress, swatting his arm in exasperation.
Whose fault was that, you buffoon?
Harry chuckled again, and Hermione was struck by how different he looked. He was distinctly taller, and for the first time since she'd met him, Harry Potter had muscles and a tan. He was still pale and far from bulky, but no longer did he show his years of neglect,
And he wouldn't be mistaken for a vampire as he could... Oh. And he wouldn't be mistaken for a vampire as he could have been before he left. His emerald eyes glittered with a mirth she'd seldom seen there before, and his entire bearing was that of a man freed from worries or cares.
"Give him a break, Marty, you'll scare him off again," Ron chortled
as he pulled his best friend back into a hug. One Harry reciprocated gladly. In the interests of catching up, the two had put aside the rest of the day, and after a quick apparition, they were back in Grimald Place, looking distinctly more sanitary than it had been when he left. When Harry turned a quirked eyebrow upon her, Hermione flushed, looking at her shoes.
"Well, it seemed a shame to leave it as it was, and Creature was desperate for something to do. And I didn't think you would mind, and..."
"Honey," she glanced up, meeting Harry's warm and highly amused grin.
"I love it. Calm down."
With any remaining ice broken, the trio went to sit, receiving afternoon tea from an ecstatic Creature, while Harry filled them in on all his explorations. Ron was gripping his armrests one moment and howling with laughter the next as Harry detailed memories that were both amusing and tense in equal measure. While Hermione was all but entranced by descriptions of temples and cultures teeming with magics she'd never heard of. If Harry didn't always elaborate on some of the magics she didn't notice... Far too easily distracted by the snippets he did throw her way. All seemed perfectly well, until Harry moved on to the topic they'd been avoiding.
"So," Harry said, placing his teacup down as Ron recovered from it.
I noticed that Ginny wasn't with you. Ron sobered immediately, leaning forward with a cautious look. Seemingly better or no, this was still a much affected Harry, and they needed to be tactful about this.
"May, listen, Ginny, well, I guess what I mean to say is," Ron floundered, causing Hermione to roll her eyes exasperatedly. "Ginny went back to Hogwarts after you left, and, well, she'd started dating a Ravenclaw in her year named Davian Chase. They've been together 3 years now. They're pretty serious."
Hermione paused, looking straight into Harry's eyes in an attempt to gauge his reaction. Subconsciously, she found her hand clasping Ron's, as they both put on the most supportive expressions they could. Their fears were proven to be entirely unfounded, however, as Harry merely smiled.
"Thank Merlin. The way you two were acting, I almost thought she'd died."
Hermione blinked, very confused, while Ron leant forwards, a hopeful smile appearing. Hermione knew he'd been truly dreading having to come in between the fallout of this, so Harry's response almost too good to be true.
You don't mind? You're okay with this?"
Harry chuckled, running a hand through his still messy hair that he'd apparently decided to grow out.
"Of course I am, mate. Would I have liked to be with Ginny,
sure, but I'm not going to begrudge her happiness. She's your sister, And more importantly, she's a wonderful person who was my friend long before she was my girlfriend. If we're just friends, that's perfectly fine, so long as she's happy. A true beam broke out on Ron's face, and Hermione shared a relieved smile with him, returning back to Harry, very impressed by the maturity of his answer. He really had grown up, hadn't he? Of course, in sharing their lovers' looks, Hermione and Ron missed the look that flashed across their friend's face. It lasted the barest fraction of a second, but for that brief speck of time, Harry's face was twisted by total, unrelenting fury. Nevertheless, it was missed completely, and the friends fell back into an easy routine of laughter and good conversation that lasted well into the night. When they finally left, Hermione and Ron were filled to bursting with happiness at the thought that their friend was restored to them, whole and hearty once more. That was a good night. Hermione missed nights like that, more than she could ever put into words.
A pause and save. Agreed. Yeah, that changes some of the rules, I think.
June 2005. Hermione couldn't have kept the smile off her face if she tried, as she mingled with her wedding guests, clad in a white dress enchanted to look as though it was almost floating around her. Across the expanse, she could see Ron awkwardly hugging his sobbing mother, while Ginny stood to the side, patting him on the shoulder. Meanwhile, Harry was conversing easily with Headmistress McGonagall, the woman laughing and smiling more easily than Hermione could honestly say she'd ever seen. Harry, too, looked happy. In the two years since his return, he had thrown himself back into his life with a gusto that honestly amazed Hermione. Gone was the shy boy who only really spoke when he had to, and gone, too, was the moody teen who all but loathed public speaking. The Harry Potter that had returned to Britain was a key public figure, one who could be seen constantly, arguing for change, for progress. The people adored him, of course, and with the black seat on the Wizengamot he held magnificent sway that only seemed to be growing. Even those who had once been Harry's staunchest detractors knew better than to oppose him publicly. Rita had tried for a while, apparently still vengeful over their prior interactions, but seemingly overnight she changed her tune completely, now singing the man's praises better than a well-trained canary. Of course, while Harry clearly enjoyed politics, it was equally clear to any who cared to look where his heart was. Harry would tell any who asked that Hogwarts was his home. And when the DADA professor's spot opened up last year, he'd quite literally thrown himself at the chance to make the statement official. By all accounts, the children adored him, and his fellow staff had nothing but good things to say about him. However... Speaking of his fellow staff, Hermione felt her eyes drift to the one part of Harry's new life she wasn't sure she liked. Daphne Grass. She had started teaching the same year as Harry, beginning a transition period for Professor Slughorn to move into retirement. By all accounts, the two, whom Hermione knew full well, had never spoken while at Hogwarts. Whom Hermione knew full well had never spoken while at Hogwarts, had hit it off, imme-
had hit it off immediately, becoming fast friends and then lovers in a matter of months. Hermione was happy for Harry, really, she was. If anyone deserved joy in his life, it was him. But did it have to be with, with her? Greengrass was never anything other than polite, and she was definitely helping Harry in the political sphere. But every time Hermione spoke with her, she knew full well that the blonde ex-Slytherin was judging her, weighing her up and finding her wanting. Daphne practically radiated superiority complex, and it set Hermione's teeth on edge. Since they'd gotten together, Harry had been around less and less, and Hermione knew exactly who to blame for that. It was for that reason that she didn't go to join Harry, instead allowing herself to join a conversation with Neville and Hannah, another couple that looked to be ready to tie the knot any day now. Surrounded by her friends, Hermione let her few concerns vanish, as the magic of her oh-so-happy day filled her. In her euphoria, she never noticed the assessing green eyes that continuously swept over the guests, thoughts whirling coldly behind them. Nor did she notice when they fixated on her parents. Merlin, did she hate herself for that? Okay. April 2006. Hermione was very, very tired. Despite the kindly assurances of her mother, Hermione was quite certain that childbirth was hell itself, and she'd been tortured by Bellatrix Lestrange for Merlin's sake. That said, the moment her baby, her little Rose, had looked up at her with her beautiful blue eyes, Hermione couldn't disagree with her mother. It was all absolutely worth it. Ron had been all but beside himself, running around St. Mungo's like a loon, sobbing and laughing in equal measure, as his daughter stared at him with the sort of bemusement only a baby can pull off. Harry was made godfather, naturally. Distance or no, he was their best and oldest friend. And as a teacher, they figured no one could take better care of little Rosie. He'd accepted with an almost manic eagerness, which Hermione dismissed as a desire to be what Sirius should have been for him, much like he was for Teddy. Honestly, it was good. If that brought him back, bridged that gap that seems to be growing bit by bit, then she couldn't be happier. December 2012. The mood in the Weasley house was more somber than Hermione remembered it being since before the war. She had been awoken at 2 in the morning by an urgent flu call, Percy's face filling her fire. Just from the redhead's expression, she'd known something was terribly, terribly wrong. But she'd never dared to imagine what she was told. At 12 o'clock that night, the brutalized corpses of Ginny Weasley and Davian Chase had been found in their home. The couple had been apparently working on a project Davian had brought home from his work at the Ministry, only for it to go wrong. Somehow destroying a vast chunk of the house, all but obliterating Ginny, and horrifically injuring Davian. The man had lived barely long enough to get to St. Mungo's, but mere minutes after arrival, he was dead. The healers unable to do anything.
Hermione had seen the photos, and almost thrown up all over her kitchen table. The young man, whom Hermione had grown to genuinely respect and like, was unrecognizable. His entire right side of his body resembled a bloody paste more than it did a human, and deep lacerations covered the rest of him as well. How he'd survived as long as he did was frankly beyond her. Of course, all of her analytical thought was rather unhelpful right now. The entire Weasley clan was gathered in the burrow, besides the children, whom Harry had graciously offered to take care of at the newly refurbished Potter Manor, an offer no one was in the right state of mind to refuse. The boy who lived's conspicuous absence was essentially unnoticed, as the remaining children and their spouses focused on comforting a beyond distraught Molly. What worried Hermione though was Arthur. The eccentric man just looked lost. His eyes completely dead. It reminded her horribly of Harry back then, after the war. But she knew with a sickening certainty that going away wasn't going to fix this. The Weasley parents were broken, and they never really came back. The next half decade passed gradually, filled with an exceptionally mixed series of events. On the one hand, while the death of Ginny was a horror the likes of which they could never truly come to terms with, the Weasley clan and the majority of their friends and family were closer than ever. Hermione watched with nothing but joy as her daughter grew up to be as bright as she ever was. With a healthy dose of her father's humor. Hermione's career also saw successes, as she continued to advance in the ministry. Everybody watching as she paved the way for real change, though no one could argue that it was a time of true peace. As the years progressed, unrest began to flicker amongst the people of Wizarding Britain. More and more Hogwarts graduates seemed to take to the streets, speaking loudly and fervently against the corrupt ministry. This disruption was interspersed with more and more accidents. Notable figures, political or otherwise, seemed somehow to find themselves in life-threatening situations. A malfunctioning portkey here, a potions mishap there, never regular enough to raise true alarm. But Hermione knew she wasn't alone in her fears that these were very much intentional events. Much as she wished she could believe otherwise, Hermione couldn't ignore what she was seeing. Someone, somewhere, was working from the shadows, working their designs upon the wizarding world, though to what end she had no idea. After all, part of the reason people were hesitant to suggest foul play was the apparent randomness of the deaths. Horace Slughorn could admittedly be argued as someone with influence, but the death of Anthony Goldstein, a skilled but hardly exceptional lawyer, a pureblood one to boot, it made little to no sense, and yet Hermione still could do nothing to quell the sense of dread that on,
that only left her when she was with her children. The one thing she couldn't say at the very least. The one thing she could say at the very least hadn't worsened was their relationship with Harry. While the closeness of their youth had never truly returned, nor did she think it ever would, Harry was still a loving, if occasionally distant, uncle to Rose and Hugo, not to mention the other Weasley scions. He showered them with gifts, and Hermione knew full well that he was always willing to lend an ear. She was grateful for that. She was even more grateful for his political influence. While their views seemed to have diverged in places, there was no denying that Harry was the figure that was holding the malcontents of society at bay. After all, by this point, all of the recent Hogwarts graduates had been taught by him for a minimum of 5 years, and a large number the full 7. Add to that the fact that he had amassed a powerful Wizengamot block, spearheaded by him with Susan Bones, Ernie McMillan, and Theo Knott, of all people, being his main supporters. Harry had also organized a public defense force, one of his few ideas Hermione actively opposed, an organization that was, on paper, a peaceful organization meant to promote order and to make sure that the public's voice was heard. That said, the fact it was headed by Blaise Zabini concerned Hermione, and she couldn't help but think that Harry had been somewhat manipulated by his wife. Daphne Potter was a powerful figure on her own merits, but throwing her weight behind Harry allowed her to make all sorts of dangerous moves, moves that often went directly against Hermione's own desires, but for some reason Harry simply let his wife's decisions slide. It was at a point that had Hermione not known full well just how resistant Harry was to mind-altering magics, she might have suspected he was being controlled somehow. But no, it seemed the only undue influence on her friend was that of his dick. All in all, as the year 2017 dawned, and Hermione was confronted by the reality that her baby girl would very soon be starting at Hogwarts. Still, she found herself hopeful. In spite of everything, she knew that the world they lived in was one in which good would always prevail, and it was her duty to keep it. Yeah. And it was her duty to keep it that way. So long as she had people like Harry standing on the same side as her, she didn't doubt that she would succeed.
Wasn't safe.
May 2017.
Miss Granger! Hermione!
The recently anointed deputy head of the DMLE jolted awake from where she had lain slumped at her desk with a squeak, drawing her wand immediately before taking in the sight of Minerva McGonagall's head in her fireplace. Not entirely sure that this wasn't a dream, Hermione rubbed her eyes as she yawned.
Professor.
Hermione watched as relief broke out on the face of the woman who had been like a grandmother to her. a woman who looked older at the moment than Hermione had ever seen her.
Oh, thank Merlin. When you entered your house, I feared the worst. Listen to me, Miss Granger. I have discovered something that is deeply concerning. Something that I will need your help with.
All thoughts of sleep, well and truly banished, Hermione rushed over to the fireplace, face set in a look that all who knew her would recognize as her planning look.
What is it, Professor? How can I help?
Minerva's gaze darted around, as though she thought they were being observed.
Not here. It's far too risky. And I don't know how deep this goes. Listen very carefully to me, Miss Granger. In exactly 12 hours, I need you to meet me at Albus's tomb. It should be safe to talk there. Understand this. This matter is of grave importance.
Hermione was now flooded with concern, mind leaping to just about every possibility she could, turning them over mentally, and then either discarding or saving them.
What matter, Professor? Why can't you tell me?
McGonagall shook her head, eyes a mixture of fearful and exhausted.
I'm sorry, Hermione, but I dare not say more than I already have. I've likely put both of us in grave danger. Meet me, and we might just have a chance.
With that, she vanished, and the fire returned to normality. Hermione slept no more that night. The next day. The next day, at precisely 1 PM, Hermione apparated onto the island that held Albus Dumbledore's tomb. Waiting, she paced frantically back and forth, desperately trying to figure out what this could be about. After a particularly unsuccessful brainstorm, she realized that she'd been waiting for over an hour, for a woman who had never been late in her life. Filled with a whole new dread, Hermione hastily made her way up to Hogwarts. Just as she reached the gates, she found Hagrid, his black beard beginning to be streaked with gray, sitting and sobbing into his hanky. At that sight, Hermione felt her fear solidify into a rock and plummet to her core. But still she couldn't quite make herself believe it.
Hagrid.
The half-giant's gaze snapped up, eyes widening as he took in the woman before him.
Hermione? What are you doing here?
Hermione approached slowly, hand clutching her wand for some reason that she couldn't quite puzzle out.
Why are you crying, Hagrid?
Her voice was soft as snow, and about 10 times as cold. Hagrid flinched, tears beginning to flow freely yet again.
It's... Professor McGonagall. She died last night.
He cut himself off with a bestial howl that racked his entire body, dislodging the rock he was still sat on. Hermione, meanwhile, felt her very soul freeze. Operating entirely on autopilot, she came right up to the half-giant.
How did she die, Hagrid?
Subtly, subtly, she sent a,
Subtly, she sent a cheering charm at the large man, though all she succeeded in doing was lessening the magnitude of it. Was lessening the magnitude of his tears.
In her sleep, Madame Pomfrey checked her over. Said her heart just gave out in the night. Nothing anybody could have done. Harry's still in a right state, though. Been running himself ragged, keeping it all together.
Hermione's thoughts never stopped whirling, but one was absolutely prevalent. She did not, for even one second, believe that Minerva McGonagall had simply died of heart failure. The headmistress had known something that merited her death. And even if it killed her too, Hermione was going to find out what. Leaving a still sobbing Hagrid with assurances that she'd be back to check on him, she shot off up to the castle. Her first port of call was the headmistress's office, which she scoured top to bottom in the search for some sort of clue. Unfortunately, she turned up nothing. Even the coded papers she'd left with McGonagall revealed nothing. Her next attempt was the portress of the old headmaster's, but despite her most frantic cries, every single one of them remained asleep, unanimous in their silence. It was amidst her seventh and most desperate plea when she heard the stone gargoyle move aside, and a rich, deep voice she knew almost as well as her own rang out. I'm afraid they won't wake. Believe me, that was the first thing I tried. But when the headmistress dies without a clear successor, they go dormant until such a time as the new head is appointed. But when the headmistress dies without a clear successor, they go dormant until such a time as the new head is appointed. Harry had barely finished speaking before Hermione slammed into him. The fear and anguish she'd been so furiously repressing, boiling over as she sobbed into the arms of her friend. Eventually, after Merlin knows how long, she was able to compose herself, as Harry steered her into a chair and placed a mug of tea in her hand. Eager for the respite, she drank almost the entire thing in moments, and then she told Harry everything. From McGonagall and the fire to her desperate search of the office, she spoke to her friend with a candor that surprised even her. At the end of her tirade, Harry leant back, eyes narrowed, rubbing his short beard, a new addition, Hermione noted semi-hysterically, before he began to theorize. "Well, I'd say that we have certain grounds to consider this a murder, then. The question is, who on earth could access the headmistress's quarters without waking her up, not to mention kill her in a manner as to arouse literally no suspicion?" Hermione looked up, and with a weak smile she began to bounce ideas off of him. Easily falling back into the patterns of their old days in the wilderness.
has to be some. It has to have been someone who knew the castle. It has to have been someone who knew. It has to have been someone who knew the castle.
Ah.
It has to have been someone who knew the castle intimately, someone able to bypass the wards. You're certain there was no trace of dark magic on her?
Harry shook his head.
I examined her myself, so did Poppy, Phileas, and Daphne.
Harry thankfully ignored Hermione's flinch when he mentioned his wife. Not one of us turned up anything. If I weren't a paranoid bastard, I would have genuinely believed that it was just a heart attack.
Hermione furrowed her brow, leaning forward and staring at her mug as though it contained the exact answers she sought.
It has to be some sort of obscure magic, something old, most likely, designed to be untraceable.
Harry nodded slowly, setting down his own tea.
Hermione, have you considered that this might make you a target?
The brunette froze at that, realization filling her. Clearly noting that she had not, Harry sighed.
I thought not. Besides the killer, I am all but certain that you were the last person who saw Minerva alive. Whatever she knew, the killer needed her dead. Needed it quiet. Which now raises the question, do they know about the conversation?
Harry paused, looking deep into her eyes as Hermione just let the man do his thing, knowing full well that whatever conclusions she reached would likely come later than his did.
If they do, then you are without doubt a target.
However, I think it's more likely they didn't. The efficiency of this attack indicates a strong likelihood that this was pre-planned to the... The efficiency of this attack indicates a strong likelihood that this was pre-planned to the minutest detail. In that scenario, it's likely that they would have distanced themselves in the time prior to the attack for an alibi, and therefore her call was likely unobserved. In that case, our top priority, besides obviously catching this bastard, is keeping you out of their focus. To that end, you can't tell anyone about this.
At that, Hermione's head snapped up as an affronted sound escaped her.
What? I can't just not tell anyone, Harry. This is a murder! Hermione!
Harry slammed a hand down, and the brunette jumped back in shock, eyes widening.
Use that brain we're all so proud of. Whoever this is managed to circumvent the Hogwarts wards at their apex, and clearly knows at least one spell that is definitely not normal magic, which if one uses logic, would imply they know more. Whoever this is, they're a threat. A threat that is apparently within Hogwarts. Flushing them out into the open would be a serious mistake.
Seeing the fear in her eyes, Harry visibly calmed, searing himself. Searing himself. Steeling himself.
What might that word be supposed to be? It says searing himself like a piece of meat. What do we think that might be? Okay, yeah, it probably is stealing. Yeah.
Stealing himself and clasping her hands. I'm sorry, I shouldn't have yelled. Listen, it's almost a certainty I get made headmaster at this point. I will use that to scour the castle.
I promise we'll find this monster and put them down. But at least for now. This has to stay between us. That means you don't tell Ron. I don't tell Daphne. No one. Okay. That means you don't tell Ron. I don't tell Daphne. No one. Okay. Hermione nodded. And the matter seemed to be settled. After a bit more discussion, she flew out from his office, flames engulfing her just before a triumphant smirk spread on the face of the man. just before a triumphant smirk spread on the face of the man with eyes the color of death. Despite his assurances, Hermione spent the rest of the summer constantly looking over her shoulder, unable to shake the constant feeling of fear. A feeling that was made far, far worse when September arrived.